Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network with your humble host, Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. This show originates and is being broadcasted live from the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana. Right next door is Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern. It's a friendly little tavern where friends meet to drink and sometimes eat. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase tanks, half tracks, or any other weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar. If you like, Tommy invites you to visit his big website, resist.com, and spend some time up there and look around. You can read news and views, listen to archive radio shows, listings of items to buy, information on where to send you donations, and just a lot of good useful information. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy another show from the Insurgent Radio Network.
Thank you, sweetie pie. You do a great job. This is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker in north central Indiana, where we still got a mountain of snow all over the place, but it's beginning to melt because it's got up above 32. It's supposed to go up to 45, and we're probably going to get flooded out now, and I'll have to get my canoe out. Well, this is Freya's Day in the bunker. Ladies' Day, that's right. So we're dedicating this show to all the she-wolves out there. And I may even have a little song for you at the end of the show. I don't know. Yeah, but you could always quit, get out of here. Some of these songs I sing over at the tavern, you know. And, hey, tonight's Friday night. Hey, and there's some places got karaoke tonight, so I think I'll probably put on my cowboy boots and hat and head on out with my main squeeze tonight. We're getting cabin fever here with all this snow. It is January the 10th, 2014, on Freya's Day. So that's the name of the game, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show and donations for other things we're doing. I just sent out $50 to another prisoner today, and some books to another prisoner. In fact, I sent some law books up to Craig Cobb up there in the Leith. It's actually the Mercer County Jail, because Monday's his day in court, so he probably won't get these in time, but I got a couple of good books for him. And they're pretty liberal on letting books into that jail. They said, no big deal, just send them in. So maybe we can help him out a little bit there. And I've been asked to go on the radio on Monday morning at a Bismarck or local area radio show up there. And so maybe I can help out a little bit by doing that. Now, if they stick in court to what I saw on the video clip that the young lady that was with Craig and his sidekick there shot, if that's all they show as evidence, they got no case. There's no terrorism there. There's not even an assault. So if I get on the radio, I'm going to say, don't give me all this Nazi stuff. Don't give me that. Let's just boil it down here to facts. It has beliefs have nothing to do with it. And you got the evidence. Who was terrorized? Who fled the town? All that kind of stuff. Well, we'll see what happens. Now, I told you yesterday that we're going to start issuing individual passcodes to paid-up associates. And that way, whenever, if you don't happen to receive a show or you lose it some way or you want to go directly into the website, you can get right on in there and you don't even have to go through us or me or the webmaster. So I'll be I'm going to send a list of everybody that's paid up through January to the webmaster today. So as the webmaster gets time, they'll be sending you a passcode, your own personal passcode. Yeah, your golden key to the CEO bathroom. Wait a minute. Well, today we're going to have some guest material on here. And I warn you ahead of time, like they always say, if you got little kitties around, you make them put their hands over their ears, but because some of this information is going to be coming from, I hate to say it, but from the left. Out there where they don't agree with us on anything about race, but there's a lot of other things that we can agree on as far as environment and health and all that kind of stuff. Economics, a lot of it, most of it we can agree on and a whole bit. So I guarantee you, you won't get herpes if you listen to this. So if you're a confirmed hardcore, right winger, well, just pretend you're not a right winger for today, okay? And analyze the information. That's what's important. Is the information valuable? Is it correct? Is it true? Or isn't it? So here we go. We're going to put Max Kaiser on here first. I get a kick out of Max Kaiser. If you download him on your computer where you can see his show, it gets pretty funny because he really causes you to have a belly laugh, or at least he does me. Of course, it doesn't take much to get me laughing. I laugh all the time. People around here say, what the hell's the matter with that guy? He's laughing all the time. He's supposed to be a sourpuss like we are. Well, that's one way you can tell I'm not a right winger. Because there's a hell of a high percentage of the people in the right wing don't smile, don't laugh, don't have a good time, don't tell jokes. So nobody's going to get me mixed up with the right wing because I'm joking all the time. My main squeeze wants to chase me around the kitchen with a cleaver because she gets a little tired of me teasing her.
Max Kaiser, let's talk about ganja. Yeah, Stacy.
Max, everybody is legalizing ganja around the world. You know, now that Colorado has legalized marijuana, following on Uruguay, and now Peru wants to legalize it. New York State is now saying that they want to legalize it, so it's a mass rush. It's like Marley's heaven, and he must be controlling this from heaven, in fact. But as marijuana stocks hit record highs, they're all booming.
Rastaman vibrations, yo, Rastaman.
I never heard that
one. Get a big Jiffy Pop hat.
Yeah.
You know, get some dreads. I'm going to get some dreads. And one of them big African-colored, Jamaican-colored, you know, Jiffy Pop hats with a big spleef, man. A big spleef.
Ooh.
We'd be like Cheech and Chong.
Woo.
Stacy and
ganja,
Max.
Ganja, ganja.
Oh, we'd get zooted, man.
Woo, ganja, ganja.
Right.
So, as cannabis is widely legalized, China cashes in on an unprecedented boom. There
oh, yeah.
Go.
Well,
China,
of course,
once
China.
Again.
Yeah, they love to. You know, they got a lot of good smoke in China, man. You know, Panama Red got nothing on that Chinese whack-whack.
So here we have again. Listen to this very first words of this article describing China cashing in on yet another boom. Cashing in on yet another boom. China cashing in.
You might be high right now. I'm thinking, I just heard you say the same thing three times. So whatever you put into that oatmeal this morning has got me completely wasted.
The communist country, the communist country that's always cashing in, right? The communist country is well-placed to exploit the burgeoning cannabis trade, with more than half of the patents relating to or involving cannabis originating in China. According to the World Intellectual Property Organization, Chinese firms have filed 309 of the 606 patents relating to the drug. So apparently 147 million people, they claim, around the world do smoke marijuana. That's about 2.5% of the world's population. I'm sure it's much higher, but here there's not only demand for recreational use, but there's a huge demand in medical terms, which has gone as yet unfilled because apparently Americans prefer opium.
Well, I think this is interesting in that if China tries to claim copyright or trademark or patent protection on the cannabis seeds that they are growing. I mean, this would be a very big reversal on what we've seen in the last 20 years, with China is basically engaged in patent pilfering. You know, and they've been stealing patents and intellectual property and trademarks for decades now. Hollywood's been fighting them, and the drug companies have been fighting them. So it's interesting now that they're saying, well, we've got half the patents or more on THC, on cannabis, and then we're going to exploit this this intellectual property monopoly, and we're going to make sure that when everyone gets high in the world, that they see a big frickin' Chinese flag that's going to be bioengineered into the ganja, is that whenever you smoke Chinese dope, you're going to see Mao Zedong over there with his big bald head smoking a spliff.
You know, there's a thing called traditional Chinese medicine, and it's all herbal-based, or I think in the UK they say herbal. But, you know, it's all, so it's their research in that, and one of the things they specialize in terms of the cannabis, in,
you gotta medical. Put down the weed, man, because your ability to articulate is severely impaired.
But one of them that they're really focusing on is constipation, which Americans might need some relief from constipation if they eat all those munchies foods that is not quite good for you. It's all that processed food.
Well, now I understand why there was an urgency to buy Twinkies. You remember Twinkies went bankrupt and they were bought by a private equity fund. Twinkies, of course, the classic munchie food, post-high munchie food. Get a big, you know, box of Twinkies, and it does cause constipation. So I guess they're going to try to have both the going in and coming out market over there in China.
Well, Peter Reynolds, who's the leader of the cannabis law reform here in the UK, says, quote, that the Chinese are smarter and they are on to all the good ideas. The potential for cannabis as a medicine is monumental. But, you know, we've missed out on it here, and we've missed out on the UK, in the US, and apparently China has all the patents.
Well, I think that would explain Boris Johnson's trip recently when he's up in that helicopter flying over various Chinese cities. What they didn't see in that photo was a big bag of ganja, which he was obviously taking copious quantities up there in the helicopter while he's getting blasted, touring various Chinese cities, saying, you know what, we're going to have a big field back in number 10 Downing Street of some of the finest dope possible in the UK.
Actually, to smoke it recreationally in China is against the law, and you face very long prison sentences. However, they are the world's leader in industrial hemp. So they grow that industrially for traditional Chinese medicine. They've always used it medicinally, which the U.S. is, that's how they enter the market. So New York, for example, is allowing medicinal marijuana, not recreational marijuana, but this is the first move.
The Chinese seem awfully confused about what's medicinal and what's not and what's available in the pharmaceutical section of your supermarket. I mean, they've got Viagra, and yet they still go after, you know, rhino horn for erectile dysfunction, driving the rhino to extinction. When all they just get that little blue pill, Mr. Chinese man, okay? You don't need to go kill a rhino to you know, get a spliff and get a little blue pill, and you're set for the weekend. Don't go kill a rhino. You don't need to be killing rhinos anymore. Get your head out of your frickin' I Ching and wake up to the 21st century.
So there you have it. China will rule the world in terms of cannabis production. And it's a great way because, of course, you know, you smoke one spliff and you need another within half an hour.
Oh, my God. I see the connection with Chinese food. Wow, I'd be buying pork buns. I'm going long pork buns.
But I wanted to, the neighboring state of Wyoming, their state troopers already warned people not to drive into their state carrying cannabis that they bought legally in Colorado. So I wanted to turn to another story, an interesting story out of Wyoming, that is a real tale for what the UK, which is going to allow fracking, what to look for here. Because, of course, they won't allow recreational use of marijuana, but they'll allow fracking. Fracking wells abandoned in boom-bust cycle. Who will pay to cap them? The companies that once operated the wells in Wyoming have all but vanished into the prairie, many seeking bankruptcy protection and unable to pay the cost of reclaiming the land they leased. Recent estimates have put the number of abandoned drilling operations in Wyoming at more than 1,200, and state officials said several thousand more might soon be orphaned by their operations. So here's Wyoming, ground zero for fracking. They were one of the first to introduce this because, of course, Dick Cheney was the former senator there. He's from Wyoming. And from the photo here, you can see fracking wells. Those are abandoned fracking wells, thousands of them across Wyoming. The companies who left them, who abandoned these wells, have declared bankruptcy, so they don't have to clean up the cost. All the farmers are complaining because their land is being toxic, is toxic. And so the state, the taxpayer, is having to clean it up. They reckon $8 million just for those 1,200 abandoned wells. There's thousands more to come.
Right. Well, this is a classic corporate predatory behavior. They knew going into the whole industry that they would be declaring bankruptcy once they fracked and they exhausted all the gas that they could through the fracking. And they declare bankruptcy, and therefore they're not responsible for the cleanup. They know that going in. That's what they tell investors on the private memo that says, look, we're never going to ever clean up. I know we signed contracts saying we will clean up, but we're going to declare bankruptcy well before we need to clean up. We won't spend a penny cleaning up. This is actually an unintended consequence of artificially low interest rates, because the return to these investors, when it all works out after tax and after cost, they're making about 5%. Return on investment. And why do they even bother with a 5% return on investment? Because the Federal Reserve Bank keeps rates at near zero. The Bank of England keeps rates near zero. So let's flash forward to the ghost of Christmas future here in the UK. You've got the rates near zero. You've got people with a lot of money, thanks to artificially pumping it with money printing, like Chinese investors, who are looking to make 5% on their money because they can't get 5% on a government bond like they would unless if the Bank of England was not artificially keeping rates low. So they put money into a fracking rig, and they sign bogus contracts that say, yes, we'll be doing the cleanup. They won't. Yes, it's environmentally sound. It isn't. Yes, it's economically viable. It's not. And yes, it will supply energy for X number of years into the future. That's a lie. It's a pure 24 to 36 month scam to make 5% on money that was gifted to them from the corrupt Mark Carney at the Bank of England to begin with. And it will result in ecological holocaust. Who cares? More debt to the UK economy. Oh, so what? And other consequences that will result in lifestyle being degraded, more cancer. You got to love cancer. Go love cancer, UK, because you're about to get a whole bunch of it because of these fracking rigs doing low artificially interest rates. Yeah, you love cancer. Your kids got leukemia. You love it, don't you? Because you're making 5%. What a bunch of losers.
Well, actually, there's one UK medical marijuana company, and they deal with a drug for specifically designed for cancer. So they could work hand in hand. Now, these people that push still this toxic sort of fracking, which has no economic sense, is, for example, in Wyoming. This guy, State Senator John J. Hines, a Republican who represents mineral-rich Campbell and Converse counties, said it was vital for lawmakers to take up the issue swiftly because natural gas was so important to Wyoming's economy. He himself has 40 abandoned rigs on his own property, which the company went bankrupt, Patriot Resource Company. They went bankrupt and left these 40 rigs. So he's looking for state funds to clean up his toxic mess on his own. But he's like high. He still doesn't see that it's a problem. He's like, we need more of this.
Right. Dick Cheney is a socialist. His daughter, Lynn, I believe her name is, she's dropped out of the Senate race in Wyoming because she's going to now open up a socialist, you know, ashram, or she's going to pray to the god of socialism, which she clearly is an adherent to. They don't work for a living. They extract wealth, whether it's from the bank, where they drain money freely at 0%, or from the earth using fracking. They don't pay for the fracking. They don't pay for the rigs. They don't pay for the land. And they never pay for the cleanup. They're just extracting the ecological resources to the point of economic suicide. It's like having, you know, Cheney and his daughter are the, like, having Charles Manson run your energy policy and your economy and your country. They're suicide cultists. They're nightmarish kleptocrats dressed up as politicians that are unfortunately the face of a neoliberal model that has driven American commerce to the point of only thing having left is smoking dope all day. Why don't they just rename the country the United States of Jamaica?
Well, and finally here, you know, on these cleanup costs that the government promises, Margaret Thatcher, speaking of neoliberalism, brought in this nuclear energy and promised that the cleanup costs would either be, well, the private companies would do it, but then the state took over, and now the state is paying more and more and more. Sellafield cleanup cost reaches £67.5 billion, says report. That was earlier in the year. It's now $70 billion already. This is the taxpayer paying for the cleanup of nuclear waste with no sign of when the cost will stop rising, according to the report. You know, in Fukushima, it's $150 billion so far. They have nuclear gypsies that go in there and clean up because they're certain to be dead soon.
Yeah. Well, once again, it's the economics of suicide, brought to you by the leaders of Japan, UK, United States, who all have the same economic policy of 0% interest rates to fund kleptocracy and cancer provocation through fracking. And the UK public and the Japanese public and the American public can't wait to get cancer. That's their goal in life. Mazel tov! All right, we got to go. Bye.
Woo, ganja, ganja.
You should have seen these pictures of these fracking wells out there in Wyoming. It looks like, have you ever been in an area where there was prairie dogs or a lot of moles and stuff that just have got these holes in the ground all over from an aerial view with this fracking shit? And I'm telling you, the white race has got a lot more enemies than just gene hijacking. And that's what the right wing doesn't seem to understand. They can talk politics all day. They can even talk race all day. They can talk about the Jews all day. But most of them are not talking about the environment, real economics, and medical, and the very important problems that the white race has outside just gene hijacking. So based on that, let's go to our next file, and that's on health. I wonder, you don't have herpes yet from listening to something from the left, do you?
Pharma, rather than fixing problems or even preventing them, they're trained to push as many pills as possible. Joining me now to talk about the problem is Dr. Tom Schneider. He's been on our Ring of Fire program before. Everybody wants to talk to Tom because he takes such a different attitude. Hugely, hugely qualified doctor, certified in virtually everything you'd want him to be certified in, years and years of experience. And I just love talking to Tom because he puts such an interesting spin to what's going on out there. He wrote a book called Physician's Apology. You really ought to get the book. Listen, if we take a look at the state of the world with Big Pharma calling all the shots, it scares the hell out of me as an attorney because I see the other side of it. I see how dishonest this industry's become, corrupt in every way. What's your take? I mean, I don't want to overstate it. Is that an overstatement?
No, I think it's an understatement, Mike, and thanks so much for having me. I love it. I love being here. Big Pharma, to me, there's two sides. There's the double-edged sword. The one sword is that we put it down, got to put Big Pharma down. The other side is that it does have an aspect of health. I take medications. The problem is the facts. We don't give out the truth or the facts or the information to the consumer to be able to protect himself. And I'm going to tell you, as you know this fact, we've talked about it, how many people did we kill last year? We, physicians, giving medications out.
Yeah, put that in terms of, say, a nuclear blast.
Right, right. So it's I give the example of a 747 carries 300 people. And if I told you that they literally lost 30 of them last year, you know, or 300 of them last year, would you sit there and say, I think I'll walk to California. I don't want to take the 747. So that's effectively what we did. We killed 100,000 people last year, and we've done that for the last 10 years. Now, that's kill. We've maimed or injured over a million.
Well, when you say maimed, you're talking about the drug industry here, and you are somebody who is spoken out about the drug industry. Let me go through the problems that after reading your book, and by the way, Tom, it is so well done. And you're talking to somebody who confronts the drug industry every day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I'm taking a deposition this week and next week and the week after that on these national cases against this drug industry. Now, here you have the thing that I've seen develop, and I guess you've watched it develop, is the creation of the biostitute. The biostitute is the scientist who will say anything you want them to say for the pharmaceutical industry for the right amount of money. And you can find them in any university. They're paid a couple hundred thousand dollars in the university to be a biostitute for somebody like Merck or Pfizer or Glaxo. Hell, they make $500,000. So tell me the impact of the biostitute.
So it's huge because, unfortunately, what we deal with on a practical level is the average physician, the guy that gets up and the gal that gets up in the morning, goes into the office, and may and probably does want to do the best for their patient. They absolutely do. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the scientist position or the associated scientist position with the university, who is, exactly as you've said, being paid for a particular study or, more importantly, let me put it to you this way, a particular result. Mm. And that information doesn't get down to the busy get-up-in-the-morning physician who's going in to see 30 patients. He takes the word of the pharmaceutical rep, who's usually cute, was a cheerleader at University of North Carolina, and
has cupcakes for him, right? Doc, here's the cupcakes. Let me don't even worry about the right. all the bad stuff with his drug. Just eat the cupcake, and life is going to be good. Now, let me shift to something else. I took a series of depositions in Europe a couple of months ago on a case that I'll be trying this year, Pradaxa, which is a blood thinner that's killing people by the hundreds.
Oh yeah.
It's produced by a company called Boehring Ingelheim over in Germany.
Yes.
And we're seeing more and more of that, European countries coming over here to the U.S., A, because they can sell their product for more money in the United States, and B, they can kill people and get away with it because the FDA is so dysfunctional. But what I saw in that deposition was that the company, and we see this very often, you'll see a company make a determination of how many people they can kill and still make a profit.
No, that's absolutely
true. In other words, if they're selling $10 billion worth of the product a year, they can sell, in 1 year they can pay off all the dead people for, $1 billion, and they've made $9 billion. And when you don't throw them in jail for that, life goes on. Isn't that kind of, do you see that firsthand?
Absolutely. And, things are going to happen, but I am not the angry physician yelling out. I'm also the patient. I don't think there's a listener out there that's had as many diseases as I have, and I'm not proud of that, but I've had them all. And, for example, I took an NSAID, something that anybody else would take, a Motrin, a Celebrex, years ago when I was running, I took one. And it perforated my intestine, and I spent 3 months in an ICU from a perforated bowel.
Hmm.
Now, this medication has been known to do that before, and when the representatives came to me, they said, well, we have to have a certain amount of failure. Some people are going to bleed. Some people are going to die. And I said to them, what's an acceptable number? And they said, about 30 per 100,000. What do you think of that? And I said, I think one is too many.
Hey, Tom, can you stay with me?
Yeah.
Do you have time to stay with me? Because we just scratched the surface on this. When we come back, I want to continue the list of the top thugs in this country. You'd have Wall Street, and then you'd have the drug industry. I just can't tell you that right now this is a topic you need to know about, and it's so important because if you're taking a drug now that hasn't been on the market for more than 10 years, you got some questions that you ought to be asking yourself. I have Dr. Tom Snyder with me now. He's written a great book about this book. You can get it on Amazon. Go through our site at Dr. Snyder. Let me just ask you this. There was a time when a CEO used to stay with a drug company they'd be there 25 years. They'd start their career there and they'd end their career there. Now what you have is a process called big profits, big risks. And the CEO is going to be there for 5 years. They're going to move through. They're going to take and extract everything they can from that drug company. And they're going to take their profits, take their big bonuses in 5 years, and they're going to go home and leave all the death and all the destruction to the next CEO. Don't you see that? As a matter of fact, you touched a little bit about that same or similar topic in your book. What's your thought?
No, I couldn't agree more, Mike. You're so on. And it really does come down to the bucks. So you've got a major pharmaceutical company that has a drug, and they are going to push it, and they're going to push it with very attractive pharmaceutical reps to the local doc. No offense to the male pharmaceutical reps that are out there, but that's what we're seen by. And the book, A Physician's Apology, is really meant as an instruction guide for patients to say, listen, if you go to see your physician and all you leave with is a prescription, find another doctor. Because although you and I are talking about pharma, Mike, and I fully understand that, we have to also at least infringe on the physician's part here. Because physicians today are taught, make a diagnosis and give the medication that's required for it. And that's obviously, better than I, not the way to do it.
Well, there's so many parts to this. You know what a good example is your discussion about statins.
Oh, yeah.
Now, okay, so we see this report come out 4 or 5 years ago. We've got to lower cholesterol below 200 to now, you know, the number then became 160. You got to get lower than that. Then the next thing we find out is that women that have a cholesterol level below 200 were at a higher cardiac risk.
Correct.
Then we find out that not only is that bad, we find out that statins basically are poisoning people, and you don't have any discussion that starts really surfacing in the important journals because the pharmaceutical industry controls the journals too, don't they?
They absolutely do, and your topic of the statin is so poignant because, in fact, I tell patients, if you're being given a statin, or really this applies to any medication, but particularly a statin, you need to ask your physician, what's it going to do for me? Well, it's going to lower your cholesterol under 200. Is there a study that says that's worthwhile? And the answer is, no. There are lots of studies, but are there valid studies? And the answer is no. The total cholesterol is not a factor. I tell my patients, what kind of fat is cholesterol? Is it good or bad? Like, oh, I think it's both. No, it's not even a fat. Cholesterol is not a fat. It is choline, liver, steroid. It's what makes your testosterone, progesterone. So you lower that, and you're going to lower your testosterone, your estrogen, your progesterone, and you're also going to have to say, or should be saying to your physician, what are the side effects here?
Well, okay, then here's the real problem, one of the very many real problems, but it is that when we take a drug, we believe the FDA has done testing on it.
Right.
Okay, the FDA has not tested it at all.
No.
Most of the time, the FDA doesn't even know what the hell's going on until the drug, 3 years later, starts killing people by the thousands. I tell you that firsthand. It is absolutely the truth because I handle these cases. Now, what they did, I've seen study after study, where they go in and they find out how influenced has the FDA been to lie? How influenced has the FDA been to cover up clinical data that was all bad for a particular drug and then say we're going to sell the drug anyway? 61% of respondents in one survey that knew cases, directly new cases, where the Department of Health and Human Services and the FDA or the FDA had political appointees that inappropriately put themselves into the FDA determination as to whether or not the drug should stay on the market or be granted on the market. All that is it's money.
It's all money.
You have a politician calling, putting pressure on somebody in the FDA, or somebody in the FDA is going to go get a job for Merck, from Merck or Pfizer. You have Pfizer meeting with the FDA folks all the time, talking to them all the time, saying, you know, Joe, how would you like to come to work and make an extra $300,000 a year when you come to work with us? How do we have any confidence in the FDA?
No, I have none. And what's scary is, I mention this because we have listeners out there that this applies to at our level, never mind the university researchers, at our level. And I would venture to bet that there isn't a single listener right now that's on a statin, that's a cholesterol-lowering medicine, a Lipitor, a Crestor, or any of the other names that are down there, Prevacol. There isn't a single one that when they were given that drug by their physician was told, your risks from this medication are diabetes type 2, increased risk of breast cancer for women, increased risk of prostate cancer for men, and 85% of you will have cognitive delay. You'll be walking around in a fog. But please take it because I need your cholesterol under 200. And, oh, by the way, we have no studies that that's going to save your life.
How it's almost like a mania, isn't it? A report comes out and says, gee, take the statin, it's going to save your life. That's followed up by a slick ad campaign by Madison Avenue hustlers that make you believe that if you don't take the statin, you're going to be dead tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, it's almost as if overnight, statin is the new black.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a study about 6 months ago that said we need to be giving these to children.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Children.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the cases that I've handled, of course, as you know, I handled the FinFin litigation. We handled we actually led that discovery in that. Fioxx, the same thing. We actually led the discovery with that. We're doing the same thing with half a dozen other drugs, right? Whether it's Actos, whether it's transvaginal mesh, whether it's Pradaxa. We see the same story every single time. And that is the drug company doesn't really care whether or not they stay on the market after the point that they've made a big profit. And here's what they know. Once the FDA allows them to sell the product, the chances of having that product pulled from the market is less than 10%.
Oh, yeah.
So they know that, look, we'll lie, we'll phony up clinicals, we'll do everything we can to distort the truth up front. Then when our product gets on the market, it's going to be very difficult for them to pull a product like Pradaxa, for example, or Actos, for example. It's going to be very difficult for them to pull it. Mm-hmm. And we see that happening right now. I see it all the time.
But it's not just the person that's listening right now, not our listener. It's everyone. So I'm a physician. I'm boarded in 5 specialties, and I also am diabetic. My physician convinced me about a year and a half ago that Victoza, and I'm not putting down one particular drug, but this is the truth, Victoza, a brand new medication better than insulin, would work wonderfully. And I did, and I took it. It turns out that Victoza has a side effect. It causes pancreatitis and hepatitis. And so, as you know, from January until May of this past year, I spent in an ICU having intra-abdominal surgery, intravenous medications to try and quiet this down.
Well, isn't the thing, I mean, at very least, we should give people a choice. We
absolutely
should say, look, here are the facts.
Yeah.
If you take this, you might get pancreatitis, you might get liver cancer, you might, you know, you may have a DVT, a blood clot, you may, but here it is. Matter of fact, as you know, we handled the Yaz case. That was the
sure
case that killed so many women in America. Yaz was a birth control pill that you had Bayer Corporation selling it as something far beyond a birth control pill. They were doing something called off-label marketing where they sold it to women telling that if you take this, if you take, and all it was a birth control, but if you take this birth control, it's going to cure your acne, it's going to solve your PMS problems, and we are the birth control with extra. What they didn't tell women was if you take this birth control, you have a 60% higher risk than the normal person taking competitive birth controls for dying from a blood clot.
Absolutely. And the marketing for that was so good, I wanted to take Yaz. I mean, it's that
well,
good.
Yeah, I mean, but we see it repeatedly. This is a story that repeats itself time and time again because there are no adults running the program with the FDA.
And it would be nice if we could demand that for each drug that comes out or each drug that's given to you or me as a patient has what I call an RB ratio, a risk to benefit ratio. Tell me what the risks are. Tell me exactly what they are. And tell me what the benefit is again. I want to know that. Now, if you do that to most of the medications that are out there right now, you would take nothing. Risk to benefit ratio, very, very important. What's the risk of a statin? Oh, my God. What's the benefit? Minimal.
What about my advice that I give people? Don't take it unless it's been out there for 10 years.
Oh, the best ever. Anything under 10 years is crazy.
And then once you have taken it, don't just listen to your doctor. Go online, find the information.
Research
for yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Tom Snyder wrote a great book, Physician's Apology. It's just so well done. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you don't have herpes yet from listening to this stuff, but basically coming from the left. Yeah, that's why we got to get rid of this left and right. Now, if we all got in a room with these people and got on the issue of race, we'd kill each other. Or at least we might bruise each other pretty badly. That's why you have to take things a little bit at a time, get the some issues that you can agree on, some issues you don't agree on. And believe me, when things get really bad, people will make their choice. They'll make their choice. And they'll swear up and down they wouldn't make that choice now. But when crap really gets bad, it goes tribal. It goes tribal. Not everybody, but a lot of people. Well, this is why the right wing never gets anywhere. Do you ever hear them talking about this stuff on right wing radio or even TV? How much of this kind of stuff do you get on Fox TV? Well, you're not going to get on Fox TV because they're involved in it. The neocons are making a fortune off these crooked pharma and environment and all this stuff. They have everything to gain by keeping the game the rotten game going. So you're not going to get it from there, and then like I say, as it dribbles down to the right wing racial programs, you can hear about Jews all day long. You can hear about even race mixing's bad all day long. You can hear all about the Middle East and what the fucking Al Qaeda's doing all day long. But some of the things that affect your life, your health, your pocketbook, it takes all this kind of stuff for white people to be educated. Trust me. Trust me. Would I lie to you? No, I wouldn't lie to you, and that's why I get in trouble. Because I won't lie, and I'm going to go looking for the information wherever I can find it, and if people don't like it, what can I do? What can I do? Maybe I'm only talking to 5 people out there. I don't know. I got an email from a guy who claims he's a Hindu of 120% Indo-Aryan Brahmin caste. Listen to this. Ha ha. You're just a stupid American, white American. 99.9% of your country are all mongrels and white mongrels as well. British and Americans are mongrels. Hitler never cared for whiteness, as he saw the USA and the UK as mongrel nations. Wow. I'm a Hindu of 120% Indo-Aryan Brahmin caste. I consider Americans and Brits to be mongrels. Don't know much about Germans because I've never been there. I do know Hitler despised the USA and the UK and the white people who lived there. I would have to agree with him. Well, that's not true. In fact, the reason Hitler got into a lot of trouble is because of his worship of the British Empire. He didn't want a war against the British Empire. He loved the British Empire. And a lot of the Nazi high command people, they worshipped that aristocracy and so forth. In fact, a lot of the high command in Germany started living like that once they were really had their program going, like Hermann Göring, living like a potentate and stealing half the art in Europe and putting them up in his castle and all that kind of shit. He was no Deutscher working class guy. He hobnobbed with all the big shots and the film industry people. So anyhow. And this guy, now this is a country where they're still worshiping cows. Yeah, can't kill a cow, because that's, I forget what their exact excuse was that they didn't kill cows, but it's something to do with their religion, of course. And, of course, religious fanaticism is the greatest danger to every race, religious fanaticism. And Hitler didn't hate the UK, and he didn't hate the USA. It was very stupid of him to declare war on the USA just to make a point with the Japanese, I guess. That was a bad mistake. But anyhow, this guy's, he's over there. If you look at the films and the TV coming out of India and Pakistan, at the street scenes, and then there's nobody over there going to be able to tell me they're equal or superior, period. And I'll bet this so-called 120%, you can't be 120% of anything. Anyhow, 120% Indo-Aryan Brahmin caste. Well, I think it's some teenager. I told him, I said, well, if we're so bad, how come there's so many of you people trying to get in here? How come they're coming in here by the droves from India and Pakistan? They've even got them working at the corporate plant here in town, bringing those engineers and stuff in. Incidentally, the corporations are training them over there, too, before they bring them in. I have found among emails from all different kinds of people, the most arrogant bastards are these Indians with the dots on their heads. They're the most arrogant people that have ever communicated with me. I mean, they're more arrogant than most Jews, I think. Anyhow, if you want to talk to him, he's fan_asimov@yahoo.com. and you could talk to this guy and set him straight. Either that or become a Hindu. Well, here's another war against our people, especially down in West Virginia. As you know, according to your website's map, West Virginia is one of just four U.S. states left with population over 90% white. This morning's news was that a chemical spill into a river from a coal company has poisoned the water for about 300,000 people, mostly white, living in nine counties. My heart cries out for these people. These are exactly the kind of people we need an underground social service network to care for, just like Hamas and Hezbollah do for their communities in the Mideast, and like Golden Dawn supposedly was trying to do in Greece. The million-dollar question in my mind is how to do it successfully, because if we or someone on our side can do it, that is, create a nationwide social service network for white poor to middle classes, the ultimate underrepresented, underserved community in this country, then that will win us much more support than all the racial parades and election attempts of the last 100 years. I agree with you 100% there. It was terrible. I saw it on TV this morning, this horrible spill down there. Nobody can drink the water. They're all trying to live off bottled water. And guess who owns the bottled water companies? The big corporations. All over the world, bottled water is controlled tightly by these same bastards. So first they befoul your water, destroy your environment, and then they sell you water to drink that they have gotten from places where they have stolen it from the people, like they did down in South America, where they got the total water rights for the whole country. I think it was Brazil or one of those countries down there, Colombia. And the people had to buy their own water back. And check your own town. You probably don't own your own water in your city. If you got a well, you got something going. I've got a well, but I know this water and water company here in Warsaw, Indiana, is not run by the town. It's owned by a super corporation. They call it American Water or something. They always put a patriotic cover on it. That's how cynical these bastards are. Hey, I see that pudgy little Brit that runs the BNP over there in England running white people into the ground, trying to say you're going to vote yourself out of this. He's got a cooking show now on television. That's all we need is a white racial champion leader with a cooking show. Okay, now let's skip over to Jim Hightower. He's a populist out there, and he puts out some pretty good stuff. Yeah, let's do that.
Have you had your daily minimum requirement of triclosan today? How about your dosage of triclocarban? Chances are you have, but don't know it. These two are antimicrobial chemicals, which might sound like a good thing, except that they disrupt the human body's normal regulatory processes. Animal studies show, for example, that these triclos can be linked to the scrambling of hormones in children, disruption of puberty and of the reproductive system, decreases in thyroid hormone levels that affect brain development, and other serious health problems. Yet corporations have slipped them into all sorts of consumer products, pushing them with a blitz of advertising that claim the antibacterial ingredients prevent the spread of infections. The two chemicals were originally meant for use by surgeons to cleanse their hands before operations. But that tiny application has now proliferated like a plague, constantly exposing practically everyone to small amounts here, there, and everywhere, adding up to dangerous megadoses. Triclosan and triclocarban were first mixed into soaps. But then, boom, brand-name corporations went wild, putting these hormone disruptors into about 2,000 products, including toothpaste, mouthwashes, fabrics, and, most astonishingly, even into baby pacifiers. Today, use of the chemicals is so prevalent that they can be found in the urine of 3/4 of Americans. They also accumulate in groundwater and soil, so they saturate our environment and eventually ourselves. One study found them in the breast milk of 97% of women tested. This is Jim Hightower saying, for decades, corporate lobbying and regulatory meekness let this chemical menace spread. But now, the Food and Drug Administration is finally questioning the continued use of the two triclos. For more information and action, go to the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC.org. It can be a virtue, but the persistent push by giant food conglomerates to deceive us consumers has turned their tenacity into raw mendacity. Brand-name food peddlers are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbyists, lawyers, campaign donations, PR hypesters, and political manipulators so they can genetically and dangerously alter the dinner we put on our family tables without bothering to tell us which items they've messed with. With practically no public notice, their first deception was to get Washington to okay the production and introduction of genetically modified organisms into corn, canola, soy, and other crops. Then, they quietly pushed to prevent federal regulators from requiring that these tampered Frankenfoods be labeled as containing GMOs. Next, they tried a grand deception, insisting that foods tainted with GMOs qualify for the national organic label. Even our usually submissive regulators balked at that one. But look out, for here they come again. Big Foods Industry Front Group, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, is now demanding that foods with genetically engineered ingredients be allowed to use the word natural on their packages. Natural? Let's see. One, these biotech mutations are not products of nature, but of corporate technicians. And two, the plants are manufactured in corporate labs by extracting genes from a foreign plant or even an animal, then splicing those genes into the manufactured creature. The very DNA of this man-made food is altered, with no understanding of the long-term environmental or health consequences. This is Jim Hightower saying, a Twinkie is more natural than that. They're perverting both our language and nature's reality. To oppose these profiteers' tenacious mendaciousness, contact the Environmental Working Group. That's at www.ewg.org.
Well, there you go. That's enough about health and environment. Maybe not enough, but enough for today, Friday. I think we'll try to keep Friday for a lot of these kind of programs about environment, health, and all that kind of stuff. And let me know what you think, because, you know, if you want to be a soldier and fight the empire, which is someday you're going to have to, or they're going to fight you, you're going to have to be healthy, because no soldier can be much value if you're sick. And if you let your enemies, even if you don't let them gene hijack, if they can poison you with food, and poison your water, and poison everything around you, how in the hell are you going to fight them? One with one hand or both hands tied behind you. So let's get on the stick and tell these other guys that these right-wingers, there's something else besides just talking about niggers and Jews. Save some time for your health. Boy, these Hollywood guys, whether in Europe or the United States, are going ape shit trying to keep up with the swelling number of youthful National Socialists and whatever you want to call them, white separatists or whatever. So they're cranking out all these movies to try to convince these young teenagers and stuff to go down a different track. Finnish director Dome Karuskaski, with that ski on the end, I wonder, has a surprisingly vast filmography for a guy who's just been named one of the Variety's 10 directors to watch last Sunday at the Parker Palm Springs, wherever that's at. His Heart of a Lion screened at 10:30 a.m. Friday at the Regal. It's about a neo-Nazi who falls in love with a woman who has a black son. Well, he must not have been much of a neo-Nazi, because if he saw that the woman had a black son, the relationship would have been ended if he's a real white separatist. His last theatrical feature, Lapland Odyssey, won the Grand Prix Award at the Alp Huez International Comedy Film Festival. He did 3 award-winning dramas before that, and his next film will be about an iconic gay man. Oh, that sounds interesting. Let's see here. But the main character Let's see here. Karofsky said that at the Parker, the white supremacist belongs to clubs of about 100 people. When you have 100 members with baseball bats, said Karofsky, you have a problem. Well, I don't know that every skinhead I've ever met had a baseball bat. Some had 357 magnums and shotguns. If you want to exaggerate, exaggerate, you fucking idiot. But the main character was based on a guy, his screenwriter, LSI Bardi, now watching Shrek 3D. He looked like a neo-Nazi, but he had three young boys with him, two blonde and one Asian. He started observing him, Karofsky said, and he turned out to be a gentleman. Karofsky and Bardi decided to try and humanize their neo-Nazi protagonist by modeling him after the man Bardi saw at Shrek 3. He is an angry bigot, but his feelings for a waitress creates a philosophical conflict that Karofsky found interesting to explore. How did he get to that moment where he had to swallow his perceptions? Karofsky asked. Of course, the reason was love. So we started to build this story that love conquers hate. Tell the people in Iraq and tell the people in Afghanistan about that. Yeah. Okay, let's see. I've lost my place here. It really is a look at the neo-Nazi lifestyle. What is a neo-Nazi lifestyle and what is a neo-Nazi? That's my question, Mr. Movie Man. Because I've seen racial separatists come in all shapes and accomplishments and business and everything else. It's an incredible, moving, and accomplished romantic drama, said Variety executive. Of course, all these Jews are going to say, oh, this is a fantastic film. It shows a neo-Nazi loving a gal who's got a nigger son. Oh, this is wonderful. I can see them rubbing their hands together with glee down at the ADL. Director Steve Gatos, but what it also has going for it is a little bit of a wake-up call for people to recognize that Europe right now, there is a fast and significantly rising anti-Jewism and right-wing fascist political movement developing country by country. We aren't really aware of it here in America. Well, if you're on the internet much, you're aware of it. Karofsky's next film will be about Tom, a Finnish andriotic, whatever that is, artist whose images celebrate the masculine gay male in the United States. In other words, bodybuilding queers. The artist, whose real name is Tuukko Liaksonen, died in 1991 at age 71. And Kukratsky said, few people knew he actually lived in Finland, where homosexuality was illegal up until 1978. Bardi is expected to finish the Tom of Finland script in March, and Karofsky hopes to begin shooting at the end of the year, and he'll undoubtedly get an Academy Award. Anybody who writes about either the poor Jews or poor blacks being picked on by horrible, muscle-bound neo-Nazis, well, you'll get a gold. It says down here, challenge is always to present the awards gala on the weekend before the Golden Globes. Next year, that will force the festival to hold its event on Saturday, January 3rd, one day after the opening night gala. Yeah. That could present additional travel challenges for people who need to come great distances for the awards. Bradley Cooper had an epic airline journey from Europe last year to get to the gala just hours before he had to be on stage. Traveling on Friday after New Year's could even be more taxing. Well, I think we ought to have a lot of neo-Nazis at this Golden Globes and this festival thing. I don't know what the hell that is. Festival chairman is Harold Matzner, a Jew, has announced that next year's festival will begin the day early. Probably be in L.A., but look, Golden Globes. You guys got to get some tickets and get into that Golden Globes. And when they start handing out all the Golden Globes to all the race-mixing bastards and the Jews, just jump up and start screaming, booing. That would be fun. It's too bad I'm living so far away from California like I used to do things like that. That's it for today, boys and girls. I hope you enjoy the show and spread the word. There's a lot more things to affect the white race than just gene hijacking. Yeah, 14-5. And I'll close out with a little song here, so I'm warning you. It's coming on, so if you can't stand my singing, you better get out of here. 14-5.
What's a sprinkler doing on so damn early in the morn? Crawling home at 5 a.m. Lord, the sidewalk sure is hard. I guess I drank too much again. Help me make it through the yard. I don't know what's right or left. I'm too drunk to even stand. Why the devil won't you help me? Please take your foot off my hand and put some coffee on the stove. Now we'll go try and find your car. I can't hack it all alone. Help me make it through the yard. I can't get my lawyer on the phone. Help me make it through the yard. God damn it, turn off those sprinklers.